I would like to thank Richard's Coffee Shop for their sponsorship. They're located in Mooresville, North Carolina. It's a coffee shop where veterans can get together, feel like they're a part of something again, feel like they're part of a community. And they're really on helping guys deal with PTSD, and they talk about suicidal things to try to get their heads back right and feel like they're part of a community again. And just a good place to go, and kind of feels like you're kind of back in the military amongst the guys again. So if you're ever in the Charlotte area, stop by, get a cup of coffee, get a sandwich, and get to know some of the veterans. They'd like to have you. Thank you again for your sponsorship. My next guest is a retired Army Master Sergeant who spent all his time in Special Operations Community, where he ended up joining the Special Forces. He spent time as a contractor and on multiple deployments overseas, not only in the Army, but as a contractor. He is the author of a book called Broken Toys. Not only is he pursuing a career, he's also pursuing an acting career and a stunt man. Welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you very much for having me, Alan. It's good to be here, brother. How's things going with you?
It's going good. Can't complain. I really enjoy doing this podcast to help guys, you know, suffer from PTSD and suicide, but we'll get to talking about that a little later. My career's gone kind of crazy itself, doing 8 years on active duty myself as a grunt, and then getting out and going on to do one of my dreams as well, just like yourself. I joined the NASCAR community and was on a professional pit crew for years, and, you know, got out of my comfort zone to get comfortable and doing the job that I always wanted to do. And that's what you've done. And I'm honored to have you on, man. Thank you for taking your time away from your family to come on the show to share your story, to help try to help other veterans that are dealing with things, and try to help them to try to pursue a better career for themselves as well.
Yeah, no, it's first, it's an honor. And then what you are doing for the community, hands down, my applause to you, brother, because it's a lot of guys out here hurting, and they need to know, can't change your dream, you know, even after the military. There's more life out here.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
And I like what you're doing with that. So that's what I like meeting you, when we talk. Yeah, because that's something that hits near and dear to all of us, you know. So, but yeah, floor is yours.
Yeah, it is a very bad pandemic we got going on with our veterans and the suicides going on, but we'll touch more of that. Let's get into your career a little bit, and, you know, where you grew up, what made you join the military, why you chose the route you took, and what the journey was like along the way in the process.
Okay, well, I'm originally from Dayton, Ohio, and so from Dayton, I joined the military. And I decided to be an airborne ranger just because one of my relatives was in the military. And he told me, he said, hey, man, these guys are pretty badass. I didn't know that he meant that literally and figuratively. You know, I was like, yeah, sure. I'll jump out of a plane. That's whatever. So, you know, left Dayton, Ohio, you know, played football. I was an athlete, you know, in high school. After high school, obviously, I went to college for a quick stint. Did more partying than college. Thus the entrance into our great nation's military. And I joined the Ranger Battalion, young 19-year-old guy, didn't have any direction, didn't know exactly what I was gonna do with my life. I said, hey, well, I can just join the Army. They got this college fund. And once I joined, changed my life. I knew right then that that's kind of what I wanted to do and where I wanted to be at. So, you know, picking the Ranger Battalion actually was the best decision that just for me, because it put me into the special operations community out the back. So I knew that that's, you know, kind of like I landed home. So
yeah,
it's a plus.
And for a lot of civilians that don't know, a Ranger tab and a Ranger scroll are two different things. A lot of people think because civilian wise, and it's not nothing, it's, they just don't know any better. So when you go to Ranger school, that's a school. When you go to battalion, that's kind of like their way of life. That's Rangers lead the way. They always put that little Rangers lead the way, because it's, absolutely, you're a part of a battalion then. So I kind of wanted to clear the air on that, because he did go to Ranger school, and we'll get into that a little later. But growing up in Dayton, Ohio, man, it's rough out there, dude. I'm from Cleveland, so I know there's not much going on.
Not much going on. Even back then, the jobs were drying up and crime was going up. And it's just, you know, whenever there's poverty, there's crime, wherever, you know. And we had a lot of crime, you know, during my high school years with drugs and, you know, single parents, just a bad situation kind of across the board there in Dayton, Ohio. So for me, the military was more of a exit plan from that situation of where I was living at in Dayton, Ohio. Yeah, and it's rough. It's still rough. Still.
Yeah. So yeah, when you left for basic, was it, did you go to Fort Benning?
No, actually I went to basic training at Fort Jackson. When I first joined the military, I was a supply dude. So I came in as a logistics guy. So logistics, it was something that, you know, I figured, sure, if nothing after the military, I'll probably be able to work somewhere logistics. Cause I know that, you know, once I figured that out, cause I didn't want to join the military and just become a tank mechanic. No offense to those gentlemen, but I don't know what jobs after the military that really that kind of sets you up for. So, and my recruiter kind of helped me out on that too. He did.
Some do, some don't.
That's true. Some just want you in, man.
Yeah. So when you went to basic, what was the hardest challenge in basic that you had to overcome? If you had one, some people don't, some people do. It's a hard thing and some people breeze through it.
For me, basic training, and then it was at Fort Jackson. So not saying that Fort Jackson is easy by no stretch, because the curriculum, you know, of basic training is pretty much the same. However, it was pretty simple for me just because I knew that this was not as hard as the alternative. The alternative would be staying in Dayton, Ohio, trying to find a job, trying to raise a family. So when I was in basic training and I knew it was my exodus, and I saw a lot of guys that had never been away from home before, you know, weren't traveled, you know, didn't play sports, weren't really team, hadn't been on any team type stuff as they were growing up. And I think they struggled more. But for me, it was a breeze, honestly.
Yeah. So when did you actually go to airborne school?
Trying to date myself now. God, dog, man. I'm right after gliders. No. I went to airborne school in 1992. I went to airborne school. Fort Benning, got there in 92. Went from airborne school to, at that time, it was called Ranger Indoctrination Program, which is now called RASP. So, you know, I did that. And after 30 days of that, I was stationed in 1st Ranger Battalion as a logistician. So that was my career. And, you know, taking care of the 11 Bravos, making sure they had what they needed so I can, you know, so they could go do their job. And at the same time, taught me so many skills for infantry set to where they helped me pass Ranger School. Because even though I was a supply guy, the 11 Bravos kind of pulled me under their wing and educated me on different stuff that I should know, you know, weapons and navigation and, you know, some things that's just challenging because as a supply clerk, you don't do that. You know, normally that's just not your feat. So it was a good thing. It was a good transition for me.
Now, did you get any flack because you weren't an 11 Bravo in Ranger Battalion?
Kind of. You know, initially when you show up and you're a soft skill or low density MOS, excuse me, you can't say soft skill.
Yeah.
Right. Can't say soft skill. So low density MOS, the guys really, they just want to see if you can, you know, carry your weight. You know, can you earn your keep? At the end of the day, they got it. Like, hey, this dude's a supply guy, but he's out here jumping with us. He's roll marching with us. He's at the shooting range with us and things like that. So they kind of, all right, hey, you know, this guy, Lagan, he's, you know, he's not that bad. You know, kid got some heart. So, yeah, it took me under wing in that. So,
yeah, and being in Ranger Battalion, the runs that they go on are insane too. So as a supply guy, keeping up with them running, they're probably looking, you know, hell yeah, this guy's the shit, you know?
Yeah, no, it was a... caught off, they were caught off guard. But yeah, I think though, I had recently just left college playing football. So athletically, I was still pretty strapped, you know, as opposed to a guy that's been sitting on the couch for 2 years and then trying to do something like that. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
And so from battalion, they sent you to Ranger school.
Yes. Yes. I went to Ranger school class 794. That was my Ranger school class. So just because, you know, when you're in Ranger battalion, they send their studs. You know, they have what's called an order of merit list. So who's the best PT guy who's always been right place, right time, right uniform? And what kid just really is kind of getting after it? And a lot of my my leadership, you know, senior leadership from E5 on up was like, you know, basically I earned my right to go to Ranger school. And when I came back as a supply clerk, E3 PFC with a Ranger tab, it was very weird for a lot of people to see that. They're like, wow, this is private. A lot of people thought I'd been demoted or something like that, you know, and just thought that because it is what it is. It's odd to see an E3 with the Ranger tab.
You don't see it at all, hardly at all. Right. You don't even see officers, a lot of officers. And I'm talking about as 11 Bravos, mostly if you're taking over a company, you got a tab on and you see a lot of officers without tabs. And it's like, wow.
Yes. Like, how'd you even get here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. What was your biggest challenge in Ranger school?
Hunger. I think that was kind of like across the board. You know, I went through when you got one MRE and two bread packets a day. So, yeah. So you're going to walk 12 miles today on a box lunch. Mm. You know, that's, you know, for MRE purposes, you know, civilians. It's like a box lunch. Like you got a bag lunch and you're going to walk 12 miles today and not get any sleep tonight. And tomorrow you're going to do it again. So I think that was the most challenging thing, the food. And I think that was a challenge for everybody, though, because you get hungry.
Yeah, my one buddy would have to ask you, how was the blueberry pancakes?
Oh, Mountain Face? At that time, they were heaven sent. The 94, I would have gave up my baby toe for some of those pancakes. Take my toe off, man. I don't need that baby toe. Yeah, take it off. Those pancakes are bomb. You know, it's funny as you go back years later to do some mountaineering training and you get those pancakes. They're not that good. They're not that good when you're on a full belly. Yeah, when you're well fed, they're not that good. But when you are starving, oh, heaven sent. Heaven sent, Mountain Face. Anybody who's ever been to Ranger School knows the blueberry pancakes in Dahlonega, Georgia. Fact.
Yep, that he talks about them all the time.
Yeah, tell him I said, hey, man.
Absolutely. His name's Joe, by the way. He's a great guy, one of my besties. I was going to ask you, what was your biggest challenge in airborne school? Because I know one thing that happened to you. I know you're the front guy going out the door. So if you want to explain that to people.
Yeah, what's funny is, so I'm in airborne school and I'm the number two guy. I'm the number two jumper. And they open the door up, you know, as we were preparing to jump, and the guy in front of me collapses. Froze, fear, panic, whatever hit him. And then the jump master looked at me and was like, they just unhooked him, moved him out the way. So now the fact that this is the first time I've ever been in an airplane and the guy that's about to jump out in front of me just faints. A little pressure there. So that was oh my God. It was more like kind of that thing at that moment. And, you know, but when he pulled me up there, obviously I went ahead and jumped out. And believe it or not, a fun fact about me, I was the enlisted honor graduate in airborne school.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome.
I don't know if I fall faster or hit harder, whatever grading criteria they had.
A little bit of both.
You're right. Right. But yeah, shout out to airborne school. I had a good time there too, actually.
No. Best job while in the Army that you held?
Team Sergeant.
By far.
Team Sergeant, hands down. ODA 7333, the Mighty Knights of 93. That was the best 2 years of my entire Army career.
If you can talk about it, why?
Camaraderie, the brotherhood, the friendships, the roller coaster that, you know, emotionally you're on when, you know, when you're in service, you know, with guys in the ranks. And one thing that we cherish about that friendship that was established when I was a team sergeant is that I haven't been a team sergeant since 2010. I talked to all 12 of the guys that I was on a detachment with yesterday.
Really?
We still have a group chat just because we got to check on each other. You know, we did a very unique job, if you would, for a very long time. And guys, you know, sometimes guys have bad days, man. So we make sure we pick each other up with some funny army memes, excuse me, or something, you know. So
yeah, it's kind of like you talk to them, you feel like you're back together again. It's that bond that you don't understand unless you were in that time period together.
Absolutely. I could tell you about it, but you wouldn't understand it.
100%.
Yeah. But it is definitely a brotherhood that would not be broken.
100%. Yeah. Most embarrassing moment in your Army career. This is where it gets funny.
I got a lot of them. Yeah, I have several of those. Most embarrassing moment, Army career. Oh, this is oversharing. So when I was a private, right? When I was a private, you know, one big thing is you never miss movement. Never miss movement. If you're late, you're done. I was in the Ranger Battalion, and me and some guys that went out hanging out, partying or whatever, and we had a deployment on Monday. So no biggie. Oh, we got a hotel room for the weekend, drinking beer. Monday morning, we oversleep. So we're driving 200 miles an hour down Abercorn and, you know, running to the barracks, and like the buses are there. People are loading. And we're just like, oh, we're done. So luckily, my squad leader at that time, he had a big heart. He only made me do about, I don't know, maybe 100,000 push-ups. Maybe 100,000. It was pretty much, I spent 30 days. Every time he looked at me, I had to get down and do push-ups. Yeah, well, every time he looked at me, I was doing push-ups.
That's better than an alternative.
Yeah, he could have gave me Article 15 and kicked me out the Army.
Yeah.
He could have missed movement. I didn't miss movement, but late. If nothing, he could have gave me some paperwork. You know, he didn't even give me a counseling statement. He made me stronger.
That's what good NCOs do, man.
Yeah, hadn't been late since.
The hardest school you've ever attended?
I wouldn't say the hardest, but the best. The most unique school is Sears School. So Sears School teaches you everything about you. Survive, evade, resist, escape. And Sears School is not for the faint of heart. And it's one of those schools that actually teaches you a lot about your human, you know, and how far will you go and how much of your brothers to your left and right that you can actually kind of lock arms with. And when you're certain, you know, they put you under duress, no food. There's some physical corrections, if you would, you know, and they teach you about you. You know, you get to find out that, hey, I love Allen because if I saw somebody about to hurt Allen, then that would bother me. And they say, hey, you know, sometimes, you know, you just got to kind of suck it up for your buddies. And that was the thing. It kind of let everybody know, hey, one, I will never be a prisoner of war. I know that for a fact. I will be out of bullets and dead. I'll never be a hostage. That's what Sears School teaches you. You will never be that. So, yeah.
How long is that?
It's not long at all. It's actually like 3 weeks, 3-4 weeks, maybe a month. You know, you do a couple of weeks of classroom time, you know, kill class. I don't want to call it kill class. It's more a field craft cast, snares, you know how to catch animals in the wild. What plants you can eat. That's the survival phase of it. Believe it or not, there's a lot of things just in your local backyard that you can actually consume. And, you know, as they say, hey, man, it'll make you go to the bathroom, and that's all you want to do is just have something in your system, some kind of nutrients, some vitamins. So that's a good thing.
Was it the longest school?
No, the longest school is the Q course, hands down. To become a Green Beret, it's like almost 2 years. Ooh. Yeah, some from flash to bang, from, you know, selection to, you know, phase one to classroom portion, depending on what your job is going to entail. Then after that, you have a language section, And then after language school, you know, depending on what language you get, you know, you may get Mandarin Chinese. How long is that? How long is it going to take you to learn that? You know, for me, it was Spanish, and Spanish was a shorter course because it's a, you know, easier language, if you would. So,
yeah,
that's a, yeah, but that was definitely the longest school. And it wasn't hard as it was grueling, because the thing about it, SF is like a lot of guys leave due to family problems, family issues, you know, wife may not be really feeling it, or, you know, a sibling passes away, or a parent, you know, where you miss out that those hours in that class. And a lot of guys, after they do that, they just, you know, kind of lose the flair for it, you know, so.
Yeah. What was it like joining the special forces community versus Ranger Battalion or conventional Army?
I haven't spent a day in conventional Army.
Okay.
So I can't really speak on that. But honestly, in Special Forces, the same camaraderie that, you know, I had in the Ranger Battalion, it's the same type, same A types, you know, it would be called like Apex Predators. It's funny to say, you know, somebody said it like, oh man, he's Apex Predators. I'm like, I thought that was a lion. Anyway, but, you know, so, but yeah, the camaraderie of the military brotherhood that I started off with, and I was able to finish my career with that same camaraderie. I still got guys in the Ranger Battalion that I talk to. I still have guys in SF that I talk to. I still have guys in 160th that I talk to. So the relationships are lifelong.
Yeah. So on your deployments, I'm sure you went to Iraq, Afghanistan. Hands down, what was your worst deployment that you went on?
I think my Iraq trip was pretty, yes, I would say my Iraq trip was the worst trip that I've been on. Only due to the op tempo of the deployment. You know, we were running mission after mission after mission after mission. And you know, the term tracer burnout is a real thing. You know, it just kind of weighed heavy on a lot of guys for, and it was just a short amount of time. And we were only there for like 5 months, maybe. It was a long 5 months, longest 5 months of my deployment history period.
What year was that?
I want to say 05, 06 timeframe.
That's when I was there. We were in Trit.
Yeah, we were at Area 4.
Yeah. Do you remember when the ODA compound blew up in Trit, 05? It was a bunch of SF guys at that. We responded to that and helped them out. It was shitty, man. It was a shitty deal. Oh, we lost him for a second. We'll pause it. We're going to see what happened. We'll keep rolling, and hopefully he comes back. Let's see here. Sorry for the little interruption here. We'll get him back on here. Let's see what happened. Sorry, guys. We'll. I think both of our internet's kind of dookie. There you are.
Yeah, I know, right? Look, technology, all this money we got in America, and we can't get good Wi-Fi. This is.
I think mine's messing up too, because I can see the little thing. But yeah, 05, we responded to the ODA compound blowing up. And what they did, they ran some vehicles into a fueler with 155 rounds shoved in the back of it. So yeah, it was pretty gnarly.
Nightmare. Yeah,
yeah. That whole 05 year was pretty bad with IEDs and VBIDs. It was not a good year at all. So, I wasn't doing what you were doing, obviously, but still, that was a shitty time over there at that point.
Yeah, it was a shitty time.
Yeah, we saw y'all guys all the time going down the road. I'm like, damn, I wish I was one of the dudes.
a buddy of mine, he said, man, I wish I had done that. You know, I wish I had went to Special Force. I wish I had did all this. And I told him, I said, be careful what you wish for, because a lot of guys that went Special Forces, that's no longer here with us.
True. Very true.
So it's a lot of brothers in Arlington right now that, you know, you don't know. Maybe the fact that you didn't go, we're on this podcast.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Now, I want to touch on a little subject. You know, it's hard for a lot of guys. A lot of guys don't like to talk about it, and it's the PTSD side of what happens when you go on deployments. And sometimes it don't even have to be an deployment that people get it. You know, people get it from car wrecks. You know, in our case, being in the military, a lot of it comes from being overseas and getting in ticks and just bad stuff happening, you know, and a lot of guys suffer from it. I like to say that the people that claim it really have it. And I know there's some people that don't, that claim it, and it kind of irritates me. But, you know, if there's a guy or a girl suffering from it, what's some words of encouragement you'd say to them to try to help them out with that?
With PTSD, what I would tell everybody is don't put yourself on an island. You know, don't shun the world out. Because the way that you can grow and kind of learn to better deal with your PTSD, also the people around you, they need to, one, be able to recognize your triggers. So in saying that, people should be around you. Hey, crowded rooms bother you? Well, people know that about you. You know, hey, I can't sit with my back to the door. You know, can't see trash on the side of the road because I think it might be an IED. So your friends and family is actually your best. Like, that's your best asset when combating PTSD, is friends and family. And when you're in need of something, call somebody, whatever it is. But hey, man, I just want to go grab a beer or a coffee or whatever. Just, you know, take advantage of that that option right there that's afforded to you just by simple hit send.
Yeah, I mean, I got some buddies dealing with it, and everybody deals with it differently. So it's not this person deals with it this way, this person deals with this. Everybody deals with it in different ways, different, like you said, triggers, and different things trigger
different. Absolutely.
And for me, it's a deal. I got a low fuse, and I deal with it. You know, I'm not as bad as what I think other people are, because I've seen some guys that, especially a lot of our Vietnam vets, they're real, still this day, real jumpy, and them guys are my heroes. And you know, they don't get the treatment that I feel like they got the shit into the stick. And we,
yes,
you know, we kind of open that opportunity up to them, which it shouldn't be that way anyway. They should have had this coming home when they got home, but you know, now they're being seen. But I see a lot of them guys that are really bad, you know what I mean, and like,
yes,
real jumpy. But there's guys, you know, like yourself, that's done a lot of crazy shit, and you know, you deal with it. So yes, like, that's the thing, is reaching out to your buddies, reaching out to somebody and just talking. And it's hard to talk about the stuff, but the more you do, the more you feel at ease with a lot of it.
And more so us as men here in America, you know, as a male in America, you know, there's a term that I do not use: toxic masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, men have been kind of taught from birth, hey man, suck it up, buttercup. You know, suck it up. You're a man. You don't cry. You don't show weakness. You know, none of that. And that's kind of, it's not fair to men, you know, being that we're, you know, expectations of a man. However, hey man, can I have a bad day? Well, no, you can't. And that's, I think that's a disservice that we're doing a lot of our veterans, you know, because when you're suffering from PTSD, you don't have to suffer in silence. You know, you don't have to. You can actually call somebody with tears. Hey man, I'm having a bad day, bro. I'm over here crying and drinking whiskey. Well, I'm on the way, right? I'm on the way. Save me some whiskey. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it. You know, let's discuss why you're crying. The whiskey part, I get it. That's fine. As long in moderation, excuse me. I'm not condoning to drink because you have PTSD. That's probably the worst thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, yeah, don't take that advice.
I mean, just taking a drink, you know, just sitting down and talking, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing. When you're drinking 50 beers, it's probably
right. Cool. Right. And that's the point I'm getting at. You know, some people are very literal. You told him to drink because he got PTSD. Okay. No, I didn't.
And see what I like about how you say all that, because you're an operator, you know, and guys, yes. It's a lot of guys from the conventional army. They're just listening to other NCOs, you know, and they're like, well, when an operator's saying it, there's an issue with it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And we have operators committing suicide, brother.
Yeah. And it's like, these guys are doing it, you know, it's a very bad situation that we got going on, you know, and it's like, I think if some of the conventional side hears from an operator, hey, you know, it's not, you know, the toxic part. It's okay to let your wall down a little bit to show that you got feelings and to be a man and stuff, you know?
Yeah, because like at the end of the day, PTSD doesn't have a face. It doesn't have a rank, have an MOS. It doesn't have a job description. It is, you saw something that you would have never seen before in your life. And when you saw that, it forever stuck with you. You know, even us as operators, you see some bad stuff, man.
Yeah.
You can't unsee that, you know, so it's like, wow, you know, so that's one of those things like, you know, your PTSD picks up. And then what's even worse is for us, after being an operator, you know, quote unquote, tip of the spear, when the music stops and they just give you your DD-214 and tell you to go home, watch Major Payne and get a good laugh, because that's kind of what it's like. You mean don't nobody need no more killing?
Yeah, for real.
No, Major Payne, you killed them all, man. Like, and these guys are out here and just still on that. Like, you know, hey, man, I need to carry a gun for. No, actually, you don't, man. We're going to Publix. We're going to grocery store. You know, some guys still, because that PTSD monster is some guys just feel like they're still being followed, or the FBI is tapping my phone, or the CIA is checking my records. Well, what are you doing that got the FBI and CIA investigating? Okay, I'm going to say stop doing that and stop calling me if that's what's
exactly. Well, I think a lot of guys lose a sense of purpose, their identity. They don't feel, I mean, you go from here one day to now you're nothing. You know, you got this, your day's planned out. I mean, you're doing, you know how it is to be in the military. I don't know in your level, but it's you're doing, and it stops, and it's like, well, what now? I was at the top.
Absolutely. What now?
Yeah, and that's where a lot of guys fall into this really bad depression. It's like you're in a comfort zone. Step outside of it. Get uncomfortable, because then real shit happens now.
Yeah, no, because now life is happening. And I had a guy call me the other day, good friend of mine. And he was talking, and he has PTSD, something terrible. And he said, man, you know, I just wish I was back on that mountainside in Afghanistan. And I was thinking, I was like, I don't. Because there's a lot of life out here outside of that mountainside in Afghanistan. Hey, man, I don't know if you remember or not, but they were trying to kill us. So,
exactly.
You know, yeah, we couldn't just ride around to the store without, you know, those opportunities. But it's crazy that, well, not crazy, that's a terrible word. It is distressing. It's like that someone would rather live back in Afghanistan than deal with the pressures of day-to-day society. The other 99% of America, which haven't served, never will serve, and don't quote me on that 99%, but realistically, it's a really low number of people that join the military, go to combat, retire. You know, it's a very small number of guys, you know, so.
Yeah, and the thing is there's so much to, I mean, in America right now, you have every opportunity to do whatever the hell you want to do. There's so much money flow right now. It's out there for the taking. You just got to get up off your fourth point of contact and go do something with it. You know what I mean? It's there for the taking, and it all it could take is somebody hearing a podcast or hearing their best friend be like, no, get up. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Come on. You know, before you lose your mind, before you lose your shit, before it all comes crumbling down, call somebody. Call somebody, because you never know, because the straw that breaks the camel back. You know, guys are strong. And another thing, too, check on your strong friends, the guys that seem to be doing great on social media and, you know, hey, I'm living my best life. But, you know, late at night, this dude is, you know, in a room by himself with a fifth of Jack Daniels and a gun. You know, that's not healthy. So we gotta make sure we check on even our strong friends, you know. But, yeah.
Yeah, and another thing I've noticed is veterans destroying other veterans. It's like, no, we're one big brotherhood. You got to, you know, what is going on here? You know what I mean?
The destroying of is this. When a veteran calls you and reaches out, you'll get some guys that'll say, suck it up, buttercup. I'm like, no, that don't ever say that to a guy. Don't ever say that, because that may be the last thing that you ever say to him.
Yeah.
You know, if a guy called me and said, hey, Ren, I'm having a really bad day, I'm going to say, let's talk about it. Let me lay it on me. Because I guarantee you, as bad as your day is going, it's probably somebody having the worst day. But that's okay. They're not on the phone with me right now. You know, they're not listening to the Alan Steele show. You know, and I challenge everybody to just listen to this, because the message has to be received somewhere. Don't kill yourself, period.
Yeah, there's no taking it back.
Yeah. Yeah, because the people that suffer are the people you leave behind. That's who suffers the worst. Mother, father, sister, brother, friends, kids. You know, and what was it all for? Like, typically it's over money. And we just said, it's so lucrative here in America. You can really just get up and go somewhere and work. You may just have to get two jobs. Or don't buy dumb shit. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Right,
stop. Hey, man, I got a lawnmower with 800 horsepower. Why?
Exactly. How many pastures are you cutting over that thing?
Right, exactly. God, dog it, bro.
Yeah, that's what they make bush hogs for.
Thank you.
But, yeah, another thing a lot of veterans try to do is live outside their means. You know, it's like, you know how it was in the military. You ain't making much more than that.
Right. You know, why did you go buy a Bentley?
If you're getting retirement, or a lot of guys get out and they don't have. Exactly. You know, it's crazy. And then, you know, a lot of guys, you know, get out and they don't have a backup plan. You got to have a backup plan.
And a backup plan. Yes. Because your backup plan, once you get out the military, all the guys that were probably civilians just a little bit longer than you, whatever. Hey, man, come on, get out the military. You know, come over here. We have a lot of jobs. And you get out and let's say you bomb the interview. Now what? You need a backup plan to your backup plan, because you left the military, which was your plan. Your backup plan was working at this place and it may not work out for you. So, and then what? And a lot of guys, like, you'll go on these interviews expecting them to care about what you did in the military.
They don't.
That's great. You're going to be here on time? Yes. Got it. You know, and guys don't get that either. Oh man, I was in charge of, you know, 200 soldiers. Well, right now you're in charge of this cash register. So I need you to focus on where you're at right now. And a lot of guys forget that, you know, kind of like they rest on their laurels for so many years. But, you know, and then when finally, you know, the rubber meets the road and it's like, hey man, you're not a superhero anymore, bro. You need to do like the rest of America. Get in line, man. You know, just hold it together. You know, help somebody. Normally when you help, when you're in your worst place, help somebody.
100%.
That would be my advice. When you're in your worst place, go help somebody. Go down to a homeless shelter. Go down and pass out $1 bills to poor strength, something. Help somebody. You know, be a crossing guard at the middle school. Something. You know, because once you start helping people, it kind of helps you, I think.
I agree. Another thing, well, we kind of hit on the suicide thing too. That's another big touchy subject where, you know, you hear from a lot of guys, and I've been that guy too, that's like, you know what, you know, grab your manhood and, you know, that's a coward's way out of killing yourself until it happened to somebody that you really know, you really cared about. And it's like, wow, you know, maybe that ain't the right mentality of thinking that way.
Yeah. Oh man, I just talked to him 3 days ago, 5 days ago, you know, a month ago. And we talked about that and I told him to suck it up. And yeah, I probably shouldn't have told him that. Yeah, I probably should have told him the opposite of that. Like, yeah, stop doing that to people. Because when somebody said that they're going to commit suicide and you don't take that 100% serious, disservice. You're doing that buddy, that brother, that sister, that friend, a disservice. You know, so. Yeah, suicide is terrible, man.
Yeah, and another thing is a lot of people are like, well, how do you know the signs? You sometimes you don't. You know, a simple phone call. Don't reject their phone call like I did that one time, you know, and I take full responsibility for it, you know, just because I didn't really want to talk. And next thing you know, I found out the next day my buddy committed suicide. So,
sorry.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Sorry, it sucks. I appreciate it.
Damn.
But yeah, it, and that's the reason why I started this, honestly, because I didn't understand it. I always thought it was a coward's way out when, you know, I still don't understand it this day. And I want to, but I'm kind of glad I don't, because then I'd probably be in the same boat. But I want to acknowledge people, you know, to not say them kind of words to other veterans, you know, that it's okay to let your guard down a little bit. You know,
it's okay to not be okay.
Exactly.
So it's okay to not be okay. Like, nobody is perfect. Nobody. You just got to do your best.
100%. 100%. But yeah, I'm glad we touched on that. It's, you know, and if you're out there suffering, hit me up, Messenger, comment on the show, whatever, you know, we're here for each other. That's what it's all about. Even if you're not a veteran, hit me up, message me. All you got to do is type my name in, you'll find me.
Firemen, PTSD, police officers, PTSD, nurses, PTSD. You know, can you imagine being an emergency room nurse during the height of COVID? No, sir. I don't want to be in that room. No. But that even those people are our first line guys and girls in the medical field. You know, during these things, it's like, wow, you've never been in the military, but you got PTSD.
Yeah.
You may have seen more dead people than me. That's guaranteed. You know, so right. Right. So that's even those people, like, feel free to reach out. I mean, I'm accessible. Alan, you're accessible. You know, hey man, if you're just in a terrible spot, call me. Trust me. I'll tell you that my spot is worse. If you want to know what pressure feels like, call me and I'll tell you. I'll tell you, pressure is something that is made up in your own head.
I agree totally.
That is something you created. You created that own pressure. Because life is easy, actually. Actually, it's easy. There's a lot of things. It's just that we tend to put ourselves under pressure. I got to get first at my job. I got to make $100,000. I got to, you know, my son has to win state championship in football or something. I have to be better than everybody else. And it's like, no, you don't. If you do your best, it'll all work out.
Just be you.
That's all. Just be you. We love you for who you are. That's
absolutely
it. That's it.
I got a couple more things and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
You did some overseas contracting stuff, correct?
Yes. Yes.
What was that like for people that don't know what that kind of stuff is? You don't have to get into detail because I know some of it you can't talk about. If you could just kind of go over that overlay a little bit.
Yeah. Once I retired out of Special Forces, you know, I ended up taking a job, Virginia area, and going to Afghanistan to work. You know, the funniest thing is I'm sitting in the office and this young E5, this kid was probably 21, 22 years old. He came in and he said, oh, so you're the civilian contractor? I'm like, and I looked at his name tag and I said, yeah, I am. And he was like, yeah, well, you work for me. And I was like, who told you that? He said, well, if you're a civilian contractor and you work for me, I said, son, let me tell you something. You're 22 years old. I was in the Army 20 years ago, and I would never, ever be that guy. So it's kind of like somewhere along the lines of contracting and military, the military deemed the contractors unworthy for their positions. And then once the kid found out that I was a retired Green Beret, he came back and was like, I said, yeah, I kind of want a Twix moment, and you're lucky I didn't just fucking beat you up in here. <'Cause>, you know, I want my job, and I don't want to beat you up. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the weird transition. But I was still able to kind of help out the guys, the operators that were going out, still doing the missions, just by simple tricks of the trade. Hey, guys, check this out. My first time over here to this country was an 02. Just give me that. Just not for nothing, I'm older than you.
Yeah.
Hear me out. You know, hear me out. I've been here. I've chewed dirt all over this country. So, you know, so that's kind of, it's a weird thing going from that. It's kind of like you being the head dude in an office one day as Master Sergeant Lagan, to come back in that office as Civilian Lagan, and the lowest ranking military guy in that room has more pull than you.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's got to be a weird thing. I haven't dealt with that. Well, in the VA, but whatever. Right. But I'm sure I'm going to get chewed up a little bit at going to my new job, what we talked about. Can't really talk about
it
too much.
Yeah. And it will, but and then certain organizations that I worked with, you know, units and things like that, that I supported, understood my value. Cause like I said, I'm talking to a 20-year-old child, basically.
Yeah.
Like you don't get it. Now, you know, that we're all older, and, you know, as I linked up with senior enlisted guys and commanders, they were like, no, Ren, we need you here. So yeah. So yeah, that's where you're going. Yeah. You'll be fine.
Awesome. I'm excited but nervous. I met a bunch of the guys, saw them passing. Hey, how you doing? Super nice dudes. Right, they're not fooling themselves. The ones that I met anyway.
That's pretty much how most of them are.
Yeah. So I'm excited. Excited to get going and support them guys and do whatever I got to do to whatever they ask me to do. So I'm up for it and ready for it and ready to get it started. Last thing is, man, you got something really good going for you. You moved to the Atlanta area, correct?
Yes. I live in the Atlanta area.
Tell the audience what you're doing now, man, because that's freaking awesome, because very few have gone to do some stuff outside the military like that. So pretty awesome what you're doing.
Yeah, so when I was contracting over in Afghanistan, we were sitting around a campfire, and I told a couple guys, I said, I'm going to move to Atlanta, and I'm going to become an actor. They were like, yeah, sure. You know how infantry guys are. Yeah, sure. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm going to open up a hot dog stand too. So sure, you're going to be an actor. And when I came here, just the access and the placement of getting into the movie industry, I started off in stunts. So being a stuntman really wasn't a far reach for me, just because I'm athletic. I like contact sports. And it's a good time, actually. It's more, I have a good time on sets. So on movie sets, and I just decided to do that because you know what? It's easy. Did y'all hear that? Easy. It is easy because I don't put pressure on myself. I don't put pressure on myself. I said, I want to be an actor. Okay. Now I'm an actor. I got a SAG card. I'm a stunt performer, stunt actor. SAG card, still working on my craft, and maybe one day be in front of the camera, as opposed to being somebody's double or, you know, doing something, you know, dangerous. So just, and now it's just a progression, you know, it's like each day I get better. Each day I got better at being in the Army. Each day I get better at being an actor or stuntman. So it's just, you know, all about what you put into it. You get what you give. If you say it's hard, it's going to be hard. That's why I say everything's easy, man. It's easy. You just got to apply yourself and have a discipline to stay the course.
And how bad do you want it?
That's it. At the end of the day, how much dog do you got in you? You know, how much? It's like, you know, some guys come into it and they get rejected, you know, 5 times, and they say, you know what, this ain't for me. Someone say, I'm married. I know rejection.
Yeah. A lot of people can't see the end of the tunnel. They just see 2 feet in front of them. It's like, no, man, no road is paved easily. It goes through a process, dirt to gravel, to the pavement. You know, it's, you got to go down that road, and a lot of people don't ain't willing to travel down it. The ones that are willing to travel down it, they make it.
Yeah, because some people say it's hard. I didn't say that. You know, I didn't say that. You know, guys, you know, like, hey, what's the hardest thing you've done? I was like, I haven't yet.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's a good way of looking at everything.
Yeah, I haven't yet.
Next time I'm like, man, I'm just like, nope. I remember what he said, what Ren said. I'm like, nope.
This ain't hard. This is easy. We just got to stop for a second, you know, look around. Okay, freeze. Because you may be the problem, because a lot of people get in their own way.
They do.
They get in their own way. Like, hey, man, just apply yourself. Stay the course. Trust in you. Surround yourself with like minds, you know, people that want to kind of get after it as well. And whatever career field you go in, you know, if I wanted to be an accountant, I would hang out with accountants. I would, no matter what. It's just, you know, because you'll be able to pick up little nuggets off of that. Like, hey, I want to do something completely different with my life. So therefore, I'm going to reach out and do that. I did the special operations thing. I did the contractor thing. Now I'm doing the movie thing. What's next after movies? I'm a writer. I love writing. I'm working to get my book published. Still looking for a publisher. The title of the book, Broken Toys, was our initial thing. And that's kind of like how I see military people. You know, broken toys. You know, they get finished with you and they just kind of throw you away. So the book kind of talks about that just a little bit, you know. But I don't harp on it. Because I say they don't throw you away. They threw you in the briar patch. People don't think about that. Oh, no, don't throw me in a briar patch. Yeah, throw me in a briar patch because I live in the briar patch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be able to do something different.
Well, another thing is something you told me you wanted to do. I'm going to see if we can make this happen. You want to drive a race car, right?
Oh, dream job. You should have to pay to have that job.
Dude.
That is the job. I got a 700 horsepower Mustang in my garage.
Let's do it.
I want to drive that NASCAR. That was born in job. When I was a little kid, one of my favorite toys, my mom bought me, they used to have these big plastic replica cars. And the number 43 car, Richard Petty, the STP car, yep. That was my guy. You know, I'm seven. I mean, Richard Petty was probably driving in the 50s, 60s, something, you know, something like that. Because he was already a legend when I, you know, as a child, like I said, my mom bought me a little toy. So, yes.
Yeah, I have a Dale Jr. one right here. I don't know if you can see it. Kind of like that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there you go.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, and I was a junior fan too.
Well, I still got a lot of, I got a lot of ties in the sport. We'll see. Got to get something to happen. But I do got, and I mean this, I do got two passes. They're good for life to actually get in the car and go around Charlotte. So I'd like to, I've really thoroughly enjoyed having you on. I'd like to give you them passes. You can either take your wife, you know, it's a driving school. It's really cool. They take you around. Yeah, man. I'll send them to you. Yeah.
Bro, you know, the world heard you say that. World, did you hear him?
I got you. Two patches? Got you, brother. Yeah.
Thank you.
Wow. You know, I'm a man of my word. So, yeah. I mean, I've had them sitting. I actually won them at a Hendrick party when I worked at Hendrick Motorsports and end up getting them. And I worked in it. So it's like I'm around it every day. And so they're good for life. So yeah, I still got them sitting.
Yeah. A bunch of the guys in the neighborhood, first off, the neighborhood I live in here in Atlanta, we all get together. Like the 500 is coming up Sunday. Yeah. We're going to be eating brisket watching race.
And that's what I'm talking about.
I guarantee you that they're all going to be my best friend right now trying to get that second pass.
Yeah. When we get off, make sure I give me your address, man, and I'll send them to you. They're actually still in the Hendrick envelope. So, and awesome. It's to the Richard Petty Driving School. How cool is that? Yeah. So, yeah, woo! Man, it's right there in Charlotte. I think you can actually, I think they got one in Atlanta too at the Atlanta Motor Speed. I think you can use them there as well. So you won't have to.
Yeah, I'll look into it.
Yeah, man. Look, brother, thanks. It was good having you on. Thank you for everything. Stay, don't exit out until after I close it. But, man, it's been an honor to have you on, man. Appreciate everything you've done for our military and speaking about two things that are pretty hard to talk about, which is suicide and PTSD. Good luck in your acting career. I know you're going to make it far. You got the will, the drive, and all the bubbliness to make it happen. I'm rooting for you, and I'm sure everybody that watches this will be rooting for you too, man.
Thanks.
But thank you again for coming on, man. You didn't have to. You didn't know me. I reached out to you, and you were like, hell yeah, let's do it. So that means the world to me.
Near and dear, bro. You said PTSD and guys having a hard time? Yes.
Yes,
get
sir.
Get my ugly mug on here. Hey, don't do it. Yeah. Please. We're all suffering.
Absolutely. Well, hang on there for a second, and we'll chat in the lobby, and appreciate it again, man. It means the world to me.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.